Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Hi, everyone. I'm Trey Strelko from the Sons of UCF, joined by Eric Lopez of the Black and Gold Banneret, and welcome to Around the Kingdom. Elo, hello.
Hello to you, Trace. It's a beautiful day. UCF football is undefeated, and maybe we're one of the top teams in the Big 12 than we realize. Who knows?
Football is back, and we get to talk about it. No more 9 months of previewing. We have an actual game to discuss before we get into all of that. Let us welcome in the third member of our Around the Kingdom team. He is Adam Eaton of the Sons of UCF. Adam keeps us on our toes, keeps track of the time when I don't ignore the time cues and blow right through them. Adam, hello.
I moved past that, Trace. Gentlemen, good evening. I do have a fun fact. I know we do fun facts at the end of the show. UCF is undefeated on weeks Around the Kingdom airs. Just something to keep in mind.
We do what we can to serve it. We try to do it as fast as we can. The fastest UCF show out there.
Thank you both.
30 minutes in and out. Thank you, Adam. We'll see you in a bit. All right, Elo. UCF 56, Kent State 6. Domination from start to finish. The Knights moved to 1-0 on the season. What did you really like? Let's begin with that.
I like the fact they dominated from the get-go. They didn't mess around. They didn't let Kent State hanging. They just dominated from the get-go. My goodness, the talent just kind of took over. That was great to see. Xavier Townsend, hello. That's the beauty of it. You know, and you've seen some of the results over the weekend in college football. Sometimes you could be sloppy and keep teams around. So I was very pleased that this game was pretty much over probably about 5 minutes into the game. Like, you felt pretty comfortable. And I liked the individual performance and how they handled themselves. I liked the play calling from Darren Hinshaw with the offense. Even though I don't think they showed a lot, I think there's more to come. I liked how the backups played and kept it going. So that was what I liked.
I know you're not a big fan of these sort of tune-up games, but you need these exhibition games. You mentioned Xavier Townsend, my non-quarterback offensive MVP. That was my preseason selection, looking good after week one. 5 catches, 81 yards. He had a touchdown or another carry there or a run. They're utilizing him in many different ways, so I'm a big fan of his. Can I also mention something I liked? My defensive player of the year consideration in Lee Hunter. 5 solo tackles, 3 assists. He was a giant among men on Thursday in the win over Kent State. So I like that. You mentioned playing time. Young guys getting playing time, as you would expect in a game of this nature. Braden Marshall, John Walker, others with valuable minutes and playing time. We got to see Timmy McClain, though not as much as I would have liked to have seen at quarterback. He was 3 of 5 and limited action. But you saw guys get playing time, and that's the sort of thing you want to see. And as best we know, no notable injuries came out of this one. And, you know, in years past, and it happens every year, someone of some importance will get injured in a relatively meaningless game, you know, a big blowout game. From what we can tell, from what has been shared, no notable injuries. So I think that is another good takeaway from this one.
You make a great point. If you're going to schedule games like this, you want to dominate and get as many players in the game get the starters out, no injuries, that you accomplish that. Whether this means anything or not down the road, that remains to be seen. I'm not sure how much we learn about it, but it is good to get out there and get some reps. you know, get your mistakes out of the way, if you will. It is. It's a scrimmage. That's what I call it. I always call these type of games a scrimmage, because if your team that's the heavy favorite does what it's supposed to do, it's supposed to be like a scrimmage where you're able to try some things and get a lot of players reps. So I think mission accomplished. Very successful. Hey, good weather, too. I like that. And we got a rocket launch at the end of the game there for those who stuck around.
We should not go without mentioning that John Rhys Plumlee threw a couple of touchdowns. He was also strong on his feet and running the ball. I know that may come up as a negative in about 45 seconds.
I thought his mechanics were a lot better than we saw at any point last year as far as throwing the football, but getting some progression on his reads. Remember last year, he was just kind of a couple seconds and he's taking off. I did like his mechanics. You could tell that Darren Henshaw has definitely been working with him. Again, it's just Kent State. It's a scrimmage, but that was a positive that I liked.
Well, in the successful debuts of Darren Henshaw at offensive coordinator, Addison Williams at defensive coordinator, they've got a game under their belt in both of their respective positions. So overall, they accomplished what they needed to do after week one amongst the nation's leaders in offensive categories. And, you know, they're 1-0 to start the season. By the way, give us both that. We predicted that. We went out on a limb, Elo. We predicted win over Kent State. So that is a positive.
Bold. We were bold on that. We'll see about some other predictions later in the show. But, of course, you can't have a breakdown of a UCF football game without discussing some things you didn't like. Because, you know, of course you got to have some things you didn't like. A lot of people didn't like John Rhys Plumlee. A couple of the turnovers. Certainly I didn't like it. I would assume you didn't like that either, Trace. What were some of the other things that you didn't like there, seeing it in person?
Well, we can talk about those things and also as a setup of things that they're going to have to improve upon on the road at Boise State, a difficult place to play for most road teams. And John Rhys Plumlee turned the ball over, right? Two interceptions, the fumble, and he was called out by Darren Henshaw twice now after the game and in the Monday media availability. Head coach Gus Malzahn mentioned he cannot turn the ball over. Here's something. There's no way this UCF team can be 2-0 losing the turnover battle in back-to-back games, right? They're going to go on the road and lose the turnover battle and expect to come out of Boise with a win. So turnovers, in particular, the decision-making of John Rhys Plumlee. We had him in the positive category, right? There were a lot of plays that he looked good on, but he forced the two interceptions. He's trying to make a play, and he was asked about it after the game, and he said, you know, it's just his instinct, right, that he wants to try and make a play, that he's a competitive guy. He's also got to be smarter than trying to force a pass and trying to get another yard. And by the way, great highlight, great photo. I don't want the quarterback hurtling over a Kent State defender in the first quarter in a photo that goes big. You know, I don't want to see that. So I think him and his decision-making, still some questions. We said right before the season, night and day difference. I don't know that we got the full night and day experience against Kent State. He also took a lot of hits. Darren Henshaw at Media Day preseason said that he tracked all those hits, a lot of hits on John Rhys Plumlee, and there were several in this game that were unnecessary. And this is a big bugaboo for me. Penalties. They had 7 penalties for 70 yards. They got to play cleaner. It was a message that they said since the game that they have to execute better, play more efficiently. Those sorts of mistakes can cost you, especially in a hostile road environment.
Wow. Penalties are always going to happen in opening games. I don't disagree with what you're saying of John Rhys Plumlee. It's kind of wild he doesn't slide. Just slide, man. Live to play another day. Secondary. I still have questions about the secondary, Trace. Giving up some big plays there. I know it's 6 points only.
They held Kent State to 6 points. 2 field goals. What more? Yep. What more do you want, Elo?
What happens if they replay our actual offense? That concerns
We're
me
We're going to find
bit.
Out a little bit more with Boise State, right?
Well, and I left wondering – what happens if is Quadrick Bullard the key? Like, what happens if he gets hurt? Like, are we thin in the secondary? I'm not sure. I still have some questions on the line, offensive line, depth wise. I'm not as sold as others, but look, unlike you, I don't like these games because they're not interesting.
Well, who do you want him to play in week one? I mean, you're really not going to like week three when they welcome in Villanova. If you didn't like Kent State, you're not going to like Villanova.
I think that's going to be an interesting question. Do you really think a team is better playing these games, or do you take the approach of a Boise State that goes to Washington and takes their lump, but now they kind of learn from that, or a Florida State and LSU that play each other? I mean, that's the big topic in college football is, Are you, and it's going to be interesting, Trace, with this conferences expanding, are we going to see more of the UCF Kent State type games and lesser marquee games in non-conference as a result? That I don't like that part if that's the direction we're headed with college football as a whole. I understand why UCF's doing it. You got to get your home games, you got to get your reps in, but I don't think we learned a lot. I know we're reaching, but did we really learn anything here, Trace?
Three scrimmages, right? They practiced against each other. Yeah. I think you need a tune-up game like this. And remember, they have a tough conference slate. So what kind of murderer's row do you want them on? There need to be some gimmies on the schedule. And Kent State, coming up, Villanova will qualify as that. We talked about John Rhys Plumlee. There were a lot of other former UCF quarterbacks that made headlines in the first weekend. Dylan Gabriel, big game. How about Mikey Keene, your Mountain West Conference Offensive Player of the Week? Thomas Castellanos, we saw him in Boston College, and Parker Navarro, his name resurfaced. So did UCF make the right decision? Did Gus Malzahn make the right decision with John Rhys Plumlee when you have all of these other quarterbacks lighting things up across the country?
To be determined, right? Let's see how this all plays out. It's one game. I mean, Dylan Gabriel had his own scrimmage against, what, Arkansas State? Like, that was, like, non-competitive. I mean, you know, Boston College struggled offensively. It wasn't like they were excelling. Mikey Keene did a nice win, but, you know, what was it? It was Purdue. Like, congratulations.
What now you're bashing Purdue. You bashed Kent State for UCF. Now you don't applaud Fresno State for going on the road and beating Purdue.
Ooh, real complicated. Congrats. I do wonder, I will say this. Credit Josh Heupel for being able to evaluate quarterbacks, right? And I mean, a lot of these guys were in the room. Dylan Gabriel, these are talented quarterbacks that maybe, you know, didn't work out here. But this is going to be more the norm, I think, now with the transfer portals across the country with quarterbacks spread out all over the place. That's what my thought was as I'm watching this. I was watching this all on social media play out as I was getting ready for a volleyball broadcast and how, you know, Josh Heupel and these guys evaluated good quarterbacks. Now, from a Gus standpoint, did he keep the right guy? I still think he did. I don't think Mikey Keene would be successful here. The Gabriel thing, I don't know what, you know, I don't even want to revisit that because we're probably going to revisit all of that during the Oklahoma week. But again, just one game. Let's see how the rest of the season plays out. But we got to get used to this, right? I mean, Trace, we're going to see more and more players out of the transfer that leave UCF that will probably do well. I saw one in person up with Florida State, Tatum Bethune, who's been tremendous at linebacker. This is not just a quarterback thing. It's other positions. We just have to get used to that and accept it.
Chris Boyle, Daytona Beach News Journal, asking Coach Gus Malzahn on Monday during the availability about the success of the quarterbacks. And Coach Malzahn, of course, very diplomatic, said that wishes them all well. Of course, they're, he said, going to see one of them again later on in the season. So I thought it was interesting how he singled that out. Perhaps he doesn't wish Dylan Gabriel the greatest level of success. By the way, Josh Heupel, evaluator of quarterbacks. There were other things, though, that he left bare in the cupboard for Coach Gus Malzahn and staff to rebuild. So has an eye for talent. Of course, we're finding, right, with the transfer portal, it's finding the right fit for you, and it is simply week one. Right. Let's see how this plays out over the course of the season before we make a final evaluation.
Are you rooting for them? Are you rooting for Thomas Castellanos to do well? Are you rooting for Mikey Keene to do well, Trace? Are you rooting them to fall flat on their face?
I asked a series of questions, poll questions on my Twitter at @signpez. And, you know, that very question, are you rooting for Thomas? Are you rooting for Mikey? Are you rooting for Dylan? Mikey Keene, I'd buy him a beer anytime. He beat the Gators in the Gasparilla Bowl. I don't think Thomas Castellanos made the best decision because I think he could have put himself in position in Orlando, and just Dylan Gabriel rubs me the wrong way, especially the way he was portrayed in the ESPN Plus series. So I don't wish as much success for. So that is our look at former UCF quarterbacks. And let's bring back in Adam Eaton. A little silly game time, Adam.
It is silly game time, but before we get there, friends, I want to remind everybody about our official sponsor, the Sultry Spirit. So what is the Sultry Spirit, you ask? I'm glad you asked. They are mobile bartending service. They have all your needs. If you want a wedding, corporate event, party, tailgate, whatever you want, their talented bartenders will shake up the perfect drinks to keep the good times flowing. So if you want to add a little extra magic to your next event, let the Sultry Spirit take the party to the next level. here's what you do. Follow them on Instagram at The Sultry Spirit. You get recipes, you get bartending knowledge, you get tips and tricks. And if you contact them either on Instagram or at the phone number 941-567-7062, use the code word. I like a good code word, by the way. Code word, Sons of UCF. You'll get 10% off and a special gift for your next event as well. Miles is the proprietor of The Sultry Spirit. He's a UCF alum. Always good to support UCF alums. Again, follow on Instagram or give them a call, 941-567-7062. Gentlemen, that is The Sultry Spirit. Again, a proud sponsor of Around the Kingdom.
Thank you, Sultry Spirit.
All right, silly game time. True, false. Very easy this time, gentlemen. I've got a statement. And you tell me if it's true or if it's false. Here is the first one for you. By the end of this season, Xavier Townsend will be wide receiver number one for UCF. Eric Lopez, true or false?
Ooh, I won't say he's wide receiver one, false, but I do think he'll be playmaker one. So I'm going to say false because you asked about wide receiver. I'll say false, but I think he'll be a playmaker one.
Trace. My offensive MVP. I got to go with Drew.
So somebody's bragging about their picks.
By the way, I say that week one, it's too early to evaluate, but I love my offensive and defensive MVPs.
There you go.
Well, I thought it was interesting. He got a lot of balls early in the game, and I think there was a concerted effort late in the game to feed Javon Baker and Kobe Hudson, so maybe something to watch out for.
Well, step up and catch a ball then. You okay? And then you won't have to worry about that.
Wow. I didn't. Wow. No, that's not on the script here. All right. Here's the next one. Colton Boomer is our new kickoff specialist. Obviously, our field goal kicker as well. So, Trace, this one for you. It's smart to have Colton Boomer as a kickoff specialist. True or false?
Not a fan of this. There are other talented kickers on the roster, I think, over the course of the season, especially with how much he kicked off in this first game. And then against Villanova, you're going to do the same thing where they score 8-9 times. I think over the course of the season, and I think we've had, kickers previous like Daniel Barsky talking about the fatigue that occurs over the course of the season. I think you got too many kickers. Now, I don't know what they see in practice. We don't ever get to see the kickers kick. So we don't know. But why use him when you have other kickers on the roster? So. I'm not a big fan.
Other kickers. He's a kicker. What else is he doing throughout the rest of the game?
There's fatigue when you're kicking off 8-9 times.
Kicking the ball, poor guy. Like, get out of here. Like, he's not making tackles playing 80 snaps. If he's the best kicker and he has the best leg on the team, of course you use him on the kickoff. You got to play field position. What are we going by committee with kickers? Get out of here. What's wrong with you?
Well, they did last season. They had a different guy kicking off last season. I'm fine with a different guy kicking off.
I disagree. No, get him. Give me the best kickoff guy. Silly. We have two different guys doing separate roles. Give me the best guy. If that's the same guy, then so be it. And if he's the best guy for the kickoffs, let him use him.
Well, that's why we're going to keep you for the next half of the show, because we don't have another guy that can carry us the rest of the way.
All right. Stop yelling at each other. Last one for you here. I'll go with you first, Eric. Here we go. Obviously, UCF goes to Boise this week. If they win this game, will this be the biggest regular season win that Gus Malzahn will have in UCF? True or false?
False. I will say that the regular season win is the Cincinnati conference. I know it's a conference game, but last year's Cincinnati win was big. Cincinnati was a top, highly ranked team. I think that really brought a lot of optimism and rankings from a recruiting standpoint. That Cincinnati game was pretty special. I would still rank that ahead. But certainly you can make the case that it will be by far the best, biggest road win they've had to date. Hopefully it's not the last one, but that could maybe give them some confidence moving forward to get some marquee conference wins in the Big 12, which they may have to if they want to compete.
Put me down for false on this being the biggest road win. Had Boise beaten Washington, maybe there'd be a little more luster on this game. Not as important. Can't get out of there with a loss, but not the biggest. And I still think we talked about Mikey Keene earlier winning the Gasparilla Bowl. I still think that's the most important win for Gus Malzahn.
I said regular season.
You said regular season.
Oh, regular season. But still no.
Okay. Thanks for clearing that up, gentlemen. Good luck.
Oh, my goodness. Well, speaking of the Big 12, Trace, you beloved.
Now, here we go. I'm
not an good weekend for the Big 12 in week one. TCU lost a future Big 12 rival, Colorado, in prime. And Deion Sanders letting everybody know about it. Losing Baylor, UCF's home opponent in the Big 12. They lost to Texas State. What? And then Trace Trout beloved Red Raiders.
I knew it was coming.
Oh, no. Blowing a big lead at Wyoming and losing in overtime, Trace. Trace, what is going on in the Big 12?
Well, I don't think Brett Yormark was particularly happy with the results that you just mentioned. And Baylor's got a tough one now on the road at Utah. It shows you the parity, right, in college football and how you can transform your roster through the transfer portal. I mean, look at what Colorado did. We'll see what, again, they do over the course of the season, but changed out the whole roster. Congrats to G.J. Kinney, a former UCF coach who did well at Texas State. Rising star, young guy, has had success at his various stops. I don't think it's the best weekend for the Big 12. I think it puts into question, will any of these teams qualify for the playoffs? You know, if already with a win over Kent State, you're talking about power rankings that have UCF in the top three, top four in the Big 12. That shows you that teams like Baylor, TCU did not do what they were supposed to do week one. And already hot seat talk for Baylor's head coach. So you can't lose. You can't, in Texas Tech's case, you can't blow that lead that they have at Wyoming. Certainly not a good look. Those losses for the Big 12 in week one.
Yeah, I don't think there's a great team in the Big 12. We're going to learn a lot about Texas this week at Alabama. If you're the Big 12, the worst case scenario is you have Oklahoma and Texas be the two best teams in the league in their final year. I think the good news for UCF, I think there's opportunities to win some games here because I don't think it's a super deep league. It's a decent, it's a nice league. There's a lot of teams that are not bad, but they're not great. But we're bearing the lead here. I got to speak on behalf of many of our audience and our fans. You can't duck this, Trace. Your beloved Red Raiders, the team that you picked as a guarantee to beat UCF, as a team you said would be could be a top 10 team sleeper out of the Big 12. How do you justify this? Justify this.
You can't justify them losing to Wyoming and blowing the 17-point lead. I have not changed my position that it is a tough road game for UCF towards the end of the season. But it's so far away. Anything can happen over the course of the season. You don't know who's going to be playing, who's going to be injured. You don't know any of those things by the time you get to that game.
Hold on. You're soft playing this. You didn't say that it would be a tough. Nobody's disagreeing that it's a tough. You guaranteed a.
I'm not backing off that UCF is going to lose at Texas Tech. I'll eat my words later on in the season, but I am not backing off that.
Wow, that is unbelievable. I could see
we'll see what the fan base says if UCF goes to Boise State and doesn't leave with a win. Okay, because it's going to be that kind of difficult road environment. So I'm not backing off.
You're doubling down.
I'm not going to put a whole lot of stock in week one. I think there's a lot of overreaction going on in week one. So I'm not ready to bail on Texas Tech after week one.
Still unbelievable. Red Raider Trace. Holding it there. What are you, Cliff King? You think Cliff Kingsbury's quarterback in there? Patrick Mahomes? I mean, they were not impressive. I mean, they got kicking issues there, too. They got a fix over there at Texas Tech.
How about Josh Allen ripping Patrick Mahomes on social media?
Wow, yeah. The course of trash the game. Talking that was going fun. On there. Baylor was the most disappointing team. I agree. That was stunning to them. They looked terrible there. And TCU,
did not look good.
No, I think they're down. I think that was a fluke. Well, they lost a lot of guys from last year. I think last year was a fluke. They lost their offensive coordinator, too. The positive, if you're Brett Yormark, you might have prime Deion Sanders in your league next year. That could be fun. Add a little juice there for the Big 12 in Colorado, adding there next year. But, my goodness.
Texas, Alabama. Arizona,
something to get used to. An Arizona game ended around 3 in the morning the other day. Get used to that.
Texas, Alabama, who you got?
Bama. Texas got to prove me something.
Yeah, I agree. Texas is not back until they win a game like this against Alabama. They still could do well in the Big 12, but I don't see them winning against Alabama. UCF game. Let's talk about the broadcast. I know that's something that you pay a great deal of attention to. You study the ratings. Ratings not good for this one. And the announcers didn't even bother to show up.
Oh, they did. Maybe they were intimidated by you or something, Trace. I don't know. But yeah, the number's not good. Down from last year's Oklahoma State game in the same slot in FS1. You could say it was a blowout. And I think only have about over 300,000 viewers. Look, FS1, it just doesn't draw big numbers like ESPN and ESPN2 does. Obviously, had stiff competition from Florida and Utah, which did a big number on ESPN. That's despite the whole cable drama that's going on with Disney and Charter, which obviously has Spectrum Cable. Most of Central Florida didn't watch. So maybe the UCF numbers would have been worse because people like other people may have just stuck with the UCF game. But no, in the production – I don't blame the remote. It's weird. Fox still does remote broadcast for a lot of their college football games at FS1. And this same crew is going to be calling the UCF Boise State game. I'll be
from where will they be in Idaho? No,
probably not. They'll probably do it from the LA studio.
That was a viable excuse during COVID, but now this should not be the case. And they seemed, I mean, they're looking at monitors, right? You've called games in a variety of ways. You know, the challenge that can come from that. And there were times, right, that they weren't exactly in what was happening because they're watching it off a monitor. They can't see the whole field.
Well, you noticed that, too, when they saw the rocket launch. Like, hey, look, there's a rocket launch going on. What do you know? And they got to play it up. Like, it's kind of – and that's the other thing that's weird is, like, they're playing it up like if they're there or not. I don't blame the broadcasters. I blame more of the company for that. There's no sideline reporter. I don't know. Some people might not care about that. The graphics, that was a bit of a polarizing topic.
I didn't have a problem with the graphics.
I thought the UCF logo thing was tilted. It felt weird. I looked at it.
It's hip. It's modern.
This Boise game is on FS1. Talk about, I don't know if it's going to be great numbers either this weekend when it's going head-to-head against Texas and Alabama, which is the game everybody's looking forward to. It's probably going to draw close to 10 million viewers.
Which is about what the number was for LSU and Florida State.
Florida State on ABC Sunday night. So it'll be interesting. UCF, not a big exposure in the first few weeks because then Villanova is on ESPN+. Plus, the earliest they could be on ABC or ESPN is the Kansas State game. We won't know that until next week. And that could play a factor with some in the Central Florida market if this cable dispute has not been resolved. So not ideal for UCF. I know some people like, you know, the two network thing, but unfortunately we're going to get used to it. We're kind of getting slighted, in my opinion, on the coverage. We'll see if that changes once they get to the Big 12.
I think the bigger thing is it was down from a comparable game a year earlier that involved Oklahoma State, which speaks a little bit to the brand, not so much the competition. And for what it's worth, the Omaha-Nebraska game, in which there were 90,000 people volleyball in attendance, outdrew it as well, and it was on Big Ten Network. So volleyball outdrawing UCF's opener against Kent State on FS1.
Wow, that's not good. Speaking of volleyball, volleyball and a part of the Olympic sports this weekend at UCF. They went 3-1 in the UCF Challenge with wins over Mississippi State, FIU, and at Alabama State. Lost to Wake Forest in 5 sets. Meanwhile, men's soccer, Trace, you were there. They came from behind to beat NC State 3-1 and another ACC win. While women's soccer won its 500th program victory on Sunday over FAU 2-1. Trace, what stood out to you?
What stood out to me first on volleyball is the way this team is coming together. It was a question I asked of head coach Jenny Maurer post-game after the win on Sunday. 2 weeks ago, we're talking about the post-McKenna Melville era, and certainly names are starting to come together now on this team. We're starting to identify some new stars. How about freshman outside hitter Ava Armore? 6'5", by the way. She's 6'5", which goes to show you how Jenny Maurer has been recruiting size, which is going to be absolutely necessary. But she's developing into a very interesting player. And a guy on men's soccer who scored is the freshman from Finland, Seiku Heiskanen. He scored against Clemson, scored against NC State. So interesting to see some new names emerge for both of those programs with early season success.
First of all, as the guy who called volleyball this past weekend, it's Ava Armour. Let's get that down straight. And I agree with you. Her and Abby Schomers, the setter, I think that's the future for UCF volleyball for the next 4 years, you hope. They're kind of, you know, take that next Olsen-Melville combo. Very young team, lost at home to Wake Forest. They're going to have some tough losses.
Had a chance there.
Yeah, 22-match win streak came to an end, but young group. Men's soccer, man, I watched the last 20 minutes of that match Friday coming over from volleyball. Great comeback win, and they're doing it with everybody. It's a balanced offense. It hasn't been Luca Dorado here, Trace. I'm a believer.
Which is good, right? Because you know he can score, and we're finding other people that can score.
And I think they're playing well defensively. They have a challenging week there. It was FIU's a big midweek match, but then you got Brown, which I'll be calling that Saturday night match against Brown. This team has got a chance to be a legit contender in the Sun Belt. We could have a case here, Trace, where UCF's first conference championship team in the Big 12 era doesn't come from the Big 12.
Doesn't come from the Big 12. Yeah. Good stuff. Good luck with the broadcast as well. Bring back in Adam Eaton. What did we get right? Give us some facts. Give us some knowledge, Adam.
All right, gentlemen. I'm glad Eric corrected you on that name, Trace. I was going to jump all over you on that one.
You,
so luckily
you knew that
was
one.
Here for,
you
luckily
knew
he
that
was
one.
Here first. Luckily he was here first. All right, some fun facts. Here we go. First, obviously, UCF traveling to Boise. Great feature, Trace, that you have on our YouTube channel right now with Brad Anderson, who's the director of equipment on the mileage. So this is the second longest trip that UCF will make in the contiguous mainland. Obviously, they've been to Hawaii. They've been to Ireland. The second longest trip. Does anybody know what the first one was?
Well, I thought this was it. Stanford.
Stanford is correct. 2015, UCF went out to Stanford, 2,800 miles. You mentioned the Kent State win, by the way. Yes, it was a nice blowout win, but it also gives us the series edge back. 3-2 UCF now to Kent State. Take that,
take
golden
that, Joshua
flashes.
Cribbs. Yeah, take that.
Joshua Cribbs. You mentioned penalties, Elo. Is that a concern for you? Something you did not enjoy? UCF's in the bottom three in the Big 12 in penalties after 1 week. You mentioned offense, by the way. UCF ranked second in the nation in total yards, 723, only trailing Oregon, although UCF is number one in rushing yards in the nation right now, 389 per game. Speaking of Oregon, you think Baylor is a tough test this week. Red Raider Trace, are you going to be watching the Texas Tech Oregon game, because Oregon, Texas Tech play this weekend, so they could also start off 0-2 on this one as well.
Ouch!
I don't guess I'm shaking this Red Raider nickname that has now come to
not me. As long Oregon, as it's Illinois. No.
One more thing. Boise State's Smurf Turk dates back to 1986. Elo, did you know that the school has trademarked this blue turf? Any school that wants to use a color other than green has to get permission from Boise State, as Eastern Washington has done with the red field, teal at Coastal Carolina, and the purple gray of Central Arkansas.
Smart business. That'd be good. If UCF had a color of turf other than green, what would you do? What would you
gold? Entire gold field. Certainly not Canaveral blue. Look for new episodes midweek of Around the Kingdom on the Sons of UCF YouTube channel. Drops also on the audio feed. For Eric Lopez and Adam Eaton, I'm Trey Strelko. Thank you for being with us for Around the Kingdom.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number four best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.